Accession number 18463, reel 42.
Dunbar, reel 42.
I know the names of the two lads that were standing up there so forlorn. There were all these bits hanging around them and got into serious trouble and got charged. And in those days, of course, it was only loss of pay because there was nothing more that they could do except stop a couple of days' pay from them. And not at that time. It would be, I guess it was Christmas before they ever got charged. And, of course, the duty NCO was a Lance Corporal from South Staffs, who also got charged for allowing the thing to happen. But it wasn't really their fault, because this wretched photographer, he'd been up at Pakchon taking photographs, and I'd avoided him then because I had this thing about being photographs. And he had a khaki drill uniform on and an officer's hat, and the old thing was, they thought he was an officer, but he wasn't at all. He was some sort of photographer. I guess he must have been a freelance or something, and at this time he was working for an Australian newspaper, I suppose, or maybe he sold the photographs wherever he could. But anyway, it's on the front cover of DIK is this Australian MMG who didn't actually, although they fired some rounds that night because the Chinese were pouring down the road there, well out of our sight or range. There was no, they didn't attack. They probed, but they didn't attack us that night. A few mortar bombs and things like that. They were whistling off down to Pyongyang, the capital at that time.
That's it. How accurate do you think your memories are?
Well, I've checked my memories with the Middlesex War Diary, which only goes up to the last day, 30th of November. The Argyll War Diary, which does the whole job. The two volumes of the 27 Brigade War Diary. And also the 28 Brigade War Diary. Applicable only up to May, of course. And I've got copies of these, incidentally, because I wrote them all out of the PRO by hand and retype them up again later. And I was out in my diary, my journal was out by one day only, and that was the 6th and 7th of November 1950. I telescoped into one day. I missed a complete day out there, and that was the only occasion that I found that my journal, which I you'll appreciate, was written before any of this sort of information was available to me. I mean, 15 years, the initial thing before this came up, and without any help whatsoever, and without any reference to any diaries. And I worked it all out I wouldn't advise anybody to ever do it again. In fact, my wife asked me never to do it again, and I promised I never would. But as it happened, I found that I didn't have to. I'd already done it. I'd done the trick, and I could remember. I could remember step by step. I can see things on the ground. I can see as I'm running forward and trying to keep the chaps' heads down at Cap Yong, decided to evacuate. I can see something green on the right-hand side. This worried me, funny enough, for a long time. And I couldn't make out, and I thought, well, maybe my memories, maybe I'm just imagining all this. And then I suddenly realised what it was. It was Ralph Brown's pack. He dropped it off when he was hit. It was green, dark green. Ours was khaki colour. And when I came back, because I knew when I came back it wasn't there, and that's what worried me a bit. Why did I see this green thing? And which it could have been anything, and it wasn't there when I came back again, when I cleared the area. His mat was there, but not the pack. And I realised, of course, they'd nipped off with his pack, but they'd left his mat because it had a big hole in it, and they didn't think that was any use. But they whipped his pack off, and whatever he had in his pack, some North Korean soldier was doling out to himself, I guess. And I then, once I'd realised that, that was the only thing that bugged me, that I couldn't put these two together. And then eventually I did, because I then remembered that when I went and collected the packs afterwards, of all the people, there was one missing. Only one was missing, because we got back Ken Sutton's and Jack Oates and the rest of them. And this one was missing. We never found his pack. So I guess the North Koreans have gone off with that. It's rather an interesting thing at the reunions. When he's there, we always have a little chat about that. He is quite convinced that the chap, he actually reached down and pulled one of these guys up, the enemy that is up, pulled him up the hill towards him. He was reaching up and Barney's reaching down to help him up the hill. And then it all broke loose. He's absolutely convinced that all these chaps had hats with little red stars on. And they didn't. They absolutely did not have hats with red stars on. There was one, most of them had American helmets on. There was one without the one with the Thompson, who I shot, didn't have any hat at all. He was completely in civilian clothes. And the other guy that was standing by Ralph Brown, who was saying, "Me South Korean," he had like an athlete's band round his head. And a chap on from the hill, or chaps maybe, I don't know, who were tossing the grenades down, I could see they didn't have anything on their heads at all. But my friend is convinced they had hats with little red stars on, and I never argue with him, because the worst thing you can do is try to persuade a veteran that he's got it wrong. He'll have a story from North Korea and South Korea, and he'll cut them in half, put them together and make one story of it. And you'll never convince him that he's wrong. It's the most difficult. In fact, at this very moment of time, I'm trying to convince John Burgess that he may have made an error in a story which he wrote for a Professor Hagerman, who was a American working out of a Toronto University, interested in this wretched germ warfare thing, which is absolute nonsense, which some Middlesex sergeant is supposed to have talked to some author of some book. Now they can't find the sergeant, they don't know his name, and I think it's just a myth, because as far as we were concerned, we knew nothing whatsoever about germ warfare until we came home. Nothing at all about it. Never heard about it. Heard of smallpox, of course, and disease ravaging the countryside, but you'd hardly use that when it was going to affect your own people. And there was, I think it was cholera in 5th Cav. They were quarantined for in January for a while, and we all had this injection. Actually, I didn't have it, actually, because I was sent off for malaria, but everybody else had an injection for cholera. I don't believe, and no one would ever convince me, that in the period that we were there, the Americans were there from end of June, but we were there from the end of August until the middle of May. As far as I'm concerned, there was certainly, on the ground, there was certainly no germ warfare at all. And I doubt even, I don't even know if there was anything in the air. I mean, that's a different matter, isn't it? Because people try out new weapons and things like that. But I mean, some of the nonsense that were dropping contaminated flies in the middle of winter are a little bit nonsensical, to be quite honest. You could find loads of flies in houses, but you certainly never found them out on the walking about on the ice. They'd have been frozen in a few seconds, I guess. But I mean, that's just purely a layman's thoughts. I've written an article on it for my, I've got a book of texts, what I call my fact book, where I've got all the, over 80 pages of facts about Korean War equipment and, rations and Korean houses and things like that. And I wrote a page on this, my personal thoughts on German warfare, a layman's personal thoughts, with no, I've never studied it, never looked at it, but just using your own common sense. You can't believe that the ground forces would have engaged in any bacteriological warfare whatsoever. What the Air Force did over the up on the Yalu is another story. I don't know if that's true or not. Sorry.
Your memory is obviously exceptional, but you claimed to me the other day that you hadn't benefited academically from it.
No. No. Not at school, no. I didn't want to do it. I'm a bit inclined, if I don't want to do something, I don't do it. I mean, I if you take car numbers, for example, I can never remember the car number. And yet I've got hundreds of cable sizes in my head, which I can rattle off, going right back to the days when I first, you know, I'm just trying to think of one at this moment of time, and it's gone from my memory, but I think it must be because I'm talking career. But all these things I could do, but academically, I guess I didn't want to do it. Most silly. I'm very disappointed in myself. My father, my mother and father, both wanted to send me off to Hampton Grammar School, pay for me to go. But even then, as a young person, I hadn't been able to pass the exam that would have got me through without payment. And I thought, if I can't do it that way, I've got to admit that some of the entrants that went from Hampton Wick School were a bit unusual, and I know my parents thought that as well, because there was one very poor lad who lived down Wick Road, and he was fantastic at maths and virtually anything he put his hand to, and he never got in the first 10. So I do feel that maybe they did look at a little at family background, you know, possibly, and because he came from a very poor family, maybe he didn't get through. I've no idea. That's just a thought. But I certainly didn't come up to scratch, and I couldn't see that it would be right for my parents to pay for me to go somewhere where I wasn't capable of maybe keeping up. I don't know. I was schooling. I was not good at schooling. I just can't, you know, sort of cope with it.
You said, as far as career was concerned, that the UN was of no significance to you.
No. Didn't mean anything. Only the brigade ever meant anything. We were in a sort of a capsule. We didn't think even much of 29 Brigade. I mean, it's only now that we're prepared to admit that they did some good work. But, you know, it seemed to us we were the sort of, they actually print on the letters some people sent us, as they put on it, the Forgotten War and the Forgotten Battalion and all that sort of rubbish, you know. And in fact, because everybody knows the story of the Glorious Gloucesters, but of course, about 2 weeks before, it had been the Glorious 27 Brigade. I've got the paper upstairs with the headline. And in a sense, we sort of felt that the Gloucesters had stolen their glories. every person with no interest in wars or anything like that knows of the Gloucesters, but nobody knows of the Middlesex. It might know the Argylls, in actual fact, but it's always been the way. If you look at, if you're interested, I'm interested in military history, English county regiments never get publicised at all. Very rarely get publicised at all. It's always the Australians, the New Zealanders, the Scots, but the county regiments. But I suppose because there's so many of them, they don't. They very rarely come up. And of course, they don't push themselves. And the Middlesex in particular, they always seem to me to feel that their name and their history was all they had to worry about. But of course, we're not in that age anymore, and haven't been for a good long time. And they never push themselves forward. And the lack of awards to Middlesex people in the First World War was a bit of a crime. You know, Mons, for example, none whatsoever. And we only got four. And I think I understand from the Code report that there were questions in Parliament about why there were all the awards were going to officers, and just shortly after that, we had a ration honour came up, and it went quite rightly to a stretcher bearer, as they always do. But I say four awards is it was when you look if you look through them, I've got a record of all battalions, and if you look at down there, you'll find that we are between the chaplain's department and the education department, which is fairly low down the list, I think. We're the lowest.
What do you mean by a ration honour?
Oh, well, a ration honour. A battalion has done well, and it's given... the troops called it a ration honour. It's given an award to be given to somebody who has done well, and the CO to decide who has done well. And throughout all the wars, you'll find that most stretcher bearers, quite rightly, get an MM, and they're usually ration honours, what the troops call ration honours, because it comes up with a ration sort of thing, you know, and it's dished out. It's got to go to somebody, and a stretcher bearer, quite rightly, gets it.